Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears back with you here on this Getaway Friday, June the 12th, 2026. 12 coming up on 13 minutes past the hour. You're tuned into WGH Talk Radio, joined in studio today by Matt Morgan. Matt, tonight we'll be live on the air from 8:15 till 10 o'clock. Should be a fun program tonight. It always is on Friday night. And then you'll be on from 10:15 till 11 p.m. What's scheduled for your program tonight?
Tonight we are going to be discussing the, alleged deal that is supposed to be at some point made between the U.S., Israel, and Iran to end that whole conflict. Things like that. The Trump administration, largely. UFC 250 at the White House. We're going to talk a little bit about that. So politics, broadly.
That's coming up when? When is the UFC event at the White House?
I don't know the date off the top of my head.
I think it's around the corner, isn't it?
Yeah, it's. I think it's like next week or something.
Well, they built the cage, and they've spent a good deal of money on building the cage.
Not even next week. 2 days. The 14th.
It's Saturday.
Saturday.
Oh, well, that's the president's birthday.
Sorry, Sunday.
Sunday. That's the president's birthday.
Oh, yes. That's right. Yes. It's supposed to be America 250. It just happens to be on Donald Trump's birthday at the White House, and Donald Trump's going to be in attendance.
Well, there you go. What do you make of that? You like the UFC stuff?
I bet you that Donald Trump and the White House, well, not even the White House, I bet you Donald Trump regrets saying that they could do this. This has probably been a security nightmare for the Secret Service and, you know, things like that. And I don't know how people, I mean, and also they're building it outside. Usually they fight, like, you know, in an indoor stadium. So I don't know how this is going to work. I mean, it's a whole different thing fighting outdoors from indoors, I would assume. You know, you actually have to deal with the weather conditions and whatnot. I don't know. I don't think they should have done it. I mean, I bet you they're going to make about $1 trillion on it, though.
Well, that's probably true. And as we go along here this morning, as many of you know, we've been celebrating our 12 years on the air with this particular station, this particular program, over 9,000 hours of programming this week. We had the big party last night, and we've had a great array of guests this week, from Ashley Williams from the Hallmark Channel to Sam Donaldson, legendary ABC News correspondent Joey DeOria, who was Bozo the Clown on WGN across the United States and in other countries. This week have been guests, former governor of Ohio, Ted Strickland. And joining us now is a gentleman who has joined me on the air many, many times over the years. And it is always an interesting and educational experience. You probably remember him best as the medical correspondent on the Today Show for so many years. He is a best-selling author and just recently was profiled in the Washington Post in an article entitled The Optimist. At 89, he's training to climb Kilimanjaro for his birthday this summer, which will be the big 9-0. What a pleasure it is to welcome to these microphones somebody we have welcomed to these microphones in the past and are glad to do during anniversary week here, Dr. Art Uhlein. Dr. Uhlein, how are you?
Good morning, Scott. Never better. And congratulations on your anniversary.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. And I was reading the article this morning in the Washington Post. What a great profile. How did this all come about?
Well, I decided to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. And people ask me, why? What are you doing this for? And the answer has to do mostly with my philosophy of life at this end of this stage of life, which is something called peak span. Most people talk about lifespan. That's how long the average person is going to live. Some people talk about health span. That's a concept I like. And that's how much of your life you're going to spend in good health. And by the way, I want my health span to equal my lifespan, which means I will be in perfect health until the day I die. When I die, I want my friends to say, what happened? He looked so good yesterday. I want to live at something called peak span, which means that I am truly using all of my potential. So many of us, as we grow older, fail to live up to our potential. We start living up to our age, and society has created this stereotype which says, oh, older people are supposed to be in decline. They're not physically able to do anything. They're losing it mentally. And that is a disastrous and incorrect image of what aging is all about. So I want to prove that it doesn't have to be there that way. Now, Scott, I got to be fair. There are some people who, for genetic reasons, sadly some for socioeconomic reasons, just are not able to enjoy the kind of physical condition and mental condition I have. But the vast majority of people who are aging have so much unused potential, and I'm on a campaign to try to get them to realize that unused potential.
You know, Dr. Yulian, I'm glad you bring this up, because right now in Ohio, we have a very interesting thing going on. One of our candidates running for governor this year is Dr. Amy Acton, who is very well known across the country for her work during the pandemic, and she is based here in Ohio, and she's running for governor. She's never held political office. What do you make of a doctor? Now, she was the state's health director under the current governor, but what do you make of a doctor running for governor? First time out, never elected to any other political office.
Well, first of all, let me say that my comments will apply to politicians across the country and are not necessarily limited to doctors. Because we've been talking a lot about this in my family. My problem with most of the candidates in this country is that they are running for offices that they are not qualified for. And what do I mean by qualified? They have experience. Right now, you know, we had a national director of intelligence who had no experience in intelligence and was not regarded as intelligent necessarily. So I have no problem with a physician running for governor if she is qualified for the executive portion of the job. We're talking about a job of managing a multi-billion probably business, because state government is a business. We're talking about managing many levels of bureaucracy. So if she's really experienced and competent and prepared to take that on, more power to her. If not, then it should be left to someone who is. So here in Los Angeles a few years ago, we had a competition between Karen Bass, whose sole qualification was that she had run for Senate a couple of times, and a fellow named Rick Caruso, a fantastically successful businessman, ran a huge enterprise, was familiar with finances and logistics, and Karen Bass won. And this city is a mess. You can't walk down my street because the sidewalks are too dangerous. You can't drive a car on L.A. streets because the potholes are so deep. And they're doing nothing about it. Forgive me for taking a long time and emoting on the subject. But that's it. For me, if she's qualified, more power to her. Go ahead and elect her.
Well, and this comes to age in a way, because the we were having a conversation on a program the other night about the fact that Dr. Acton, who is a Democrat, has said that if she is elected, she will put both Republicans and Democrats in her cabinet. And I was having a conversation on one of the programs we do And we were trying to think of Republicans, moderate Republicans, who she could appoint to her cabinet. And a lot of the people that I were naming were people who were, you know, in their 70s, 80s, because that group of Republicans tend to be a little more moderate than the younger Republicans do these days. And when I said that, somebody on the panel said, you've got to go younger, as if the only disqualifying measure would be because they're over 80 or over 75, wow. They can't do it. And that kind of struck me in a way that no matter what position they were, I even mentioned some former governors who are still alive that are Republicans in their 80s, not that they would do it, but even the fact that they might be mentioned, just their age alone would disqualify them.
I think it's time we stop identifying people by their age. I mean, if 80 is too old to be of service to other people, then I'm too old to talk to you anymore. I'm 89 years old, and why should anyone listen to me? There is a reason, and the reason is that with age comes experience, and with experience comes wisdom. It's not enough to have knowledge. Young people have lots of knowledge. They just don't have, many of them, just don't have the experience and the wisdom. So it is time to stop defining people by their age. I tell older people, live up to your potential, not your age. Don't allow yourself to be defined by age. And I categorically reject the comments about people being too old. We had this issue going on when Trump was running against Biden. Oh, Biden's too old for the job. No, he might have been too frail for the job. He might have had the wrong philosophy of the job. Trump is, around 80. He was not too old for the job. I didn't want either one of them elected. Not because of their age, but because I was not comfortable with the way they were functioning. So I categorically reject that. Hey, I'm going up Kilimanjaro at 90. What does that say about my physical capability? It says it's great. I'm spending an hour talking with you today. What does that say about my mental capability? It says I'm really smart. I'm intelligent. I'm wise. Okay.
Well, and I think it is on all fronts. You know, it's very interesting in the area we live in here. I live in Ohio. A former treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow, who's in the Guinness Book of World Records for signing more money than anybody else, served under President Bill Clinton, is the only person in government ever to hold office on the local, state, and national level. She is here in this city, and I have her on usually weekly to comment on the political scene. Now, she is over 90. She would not like me saying that, but she is over 90 at this point. But she still drives. She still lives alone. She still keeps an active lifestyle. But it would be unthinkable for somebody to say that she should run for something or that she should be appointed to a position. It would be unthinkable for people to suggest that just because of her age. Now, I'm not saying she would do it, but who would be more qualified?
Well, I would like to remind you that there was a time in this country when people would have said, she's unqualified because she's a woman. There was a time in this country when women were not allowed to vote. So that is as nonsensical, saying that she's unqualified because she's a woman, as it would be to say she's unqualified because of her age. The fact of the matter is she is more qualified than tens of thousands of younger people.
Well, and that's it. And, you know, I have even been, and it's not by a lot of people, but I've even been criticized by people who say, well, you know, the guest, referring to her and other people, need to be a little younger. I thought, well, what in the world? Well, what does that have to do with anything?
Very, very, very little. But, you know, something, this is the world we live in today. It is youth-oriented. There's no wisdom behind that. Don't try to make sense out of this. You can't make sense out of this country anymore, right?
No. Well, speaking of that, well, what do you make of the health organizations at the federal level at this point? We've got a Kennedy, RFK Jr., in charge of those. What do you make of what's going on with health in the United States?
Oh, you don't really want me to get started on that, do you? I am so dismayed. I am dismayed by the presence of unqualified people in jobs of fantastic power. I am dismayed by the cancellation of cancer research projects, aging research projects, because the universities won't comply with the administration's political goals. I am troubled by the closure of an office on aging, an office that sponsored aging research across the country. I mean, the list goes on and on. They are destroying science. And by the way, they are destroying our ability to cope with these disorders 5, 10, 15, 25 years from now. There may be a researcher whose lab was closed who might have had the key to a cancer cure 5 years from now, but they closed it because the university wasn't politically aligned with the secretary's position. There are 3 children dead in the last year from measles because this secretary of health has just undermined belief in the science of immunizations. I'm really, really troubled by this. I'm not practicing, haven't practiced clinical medicine for a long time, but I am asked so many questions about what is going on because nobody knows what to believe anymore.
Well, and that's one of the problems. And Dr. Yulene, I certainly understand that a doctor would have to do a physical examination to know for sure on something. But so much is being made these days about President Trump and some of the things he says mentally. But, I mean, we have all seen the bruises on the back of his hands. We have seen the swelling of the ankles. We have seen what his weight is. I believe that was released recently after his physical examination. What do you make of the president's health at this point? Do you think it's as good as he says or the doctors around him are saying?
Well, I can't share an opinion on his health because I have not examined him. And there is something called the Goldwater Rule, which the American Psychiatric Association says you can't comment on men's mental health or a woman's mental health unless you have personally performed an examination and have the patient's or the person's consent to share that information. I sort of challenge that a little bit because when you have an opportunity to see a man 1,000 times on the air to listen to the way he speaks and what he says, I think it is possible to form your own opinion of that person. When you have an opportunity to look at the American Psychiatric Association's guidelines for mental disorders, they have published a set of guidelines for all mental disorders, and they list the criteria for each mental disorder. So I would urge people to look up the DSM-3, that's the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, put out by the American Psychiatric Association, and look at the criteria for the diagnosis of sociopathic personality disorder, and look at the criteria for narcissistic personality disorder. And I want to emphasize the word disorder, because there's nothing wrong with having I don't like narcissists, but there's nothing sick about being a narcissist unless you carry it to the point where it is a sickness, a disorder. So I would urge people to look up those criteria and then make up their own mind. You know, is Donald Trump mentally ill or not? Don't ask me about that. I don't like the fact that he is overweight, but, you know, that doesn't disqualify him. But I can't give you an opinion. I have my own opinion, and I won't share it on the air.
I understand. Well, speaking of on the air, because obviously, Dr. Euline, age is just a number to you, so this has nothing to do with age, but you spent a lot of your career writing very successful books, and because of those books and because of your visibility, you were the medical expert on the Today Show and a medical expert for ABC for many years. Do you miss being on the air?
Not for one second. It's interesting. I refused to move to New York, although my job was in New York. So I flew 6 million miles between L.A. and New York. They said, we want you live on the set. I used to tape some spot. We want you live here 3 times a week. And so I would, on Sunday night, I would fly a red eye. I'd go to the airport and get on a plane at 11 o'clock at night. Land at 6:30 or 7, race into the studio, do my little spot at 8:35, then go to the airport and fly home. Tuesday night, I would repeat the same act and fly home on Wednesday. And then I fly back in again on Thursday. I had kids. I wanted to be home with my kids. So I don't miss that. I feel it was an important spot. I was not an expert on anything, by the way. My skill was in talking to the experts, reading their work, and translating it for an audience at home. The thing I am most proud of was my ability to translate complex subjects and research into action items. I was able to look in the camera and say, hey, if you want to put this information to work in your own life, here are 3 things you could do. But I don't miss it. There's another example of people defining who they are by what they do. And I don't do that anymore. I got a big, tall mirror right outside my office here. And I stand that in front of that mirror every day. And I look in that mirror and I say, do you like who you are? And if I can smile and say, yeah, I like who you are, Art, I like the way you're living your life, then my day is going to be a good day.
You know, Dr. Euline, one of the biggest topics, I would say, in medicine today, and a matter of fact, we had a big anniversary party here last night at the station, and I know there was at least one person, maybe two last night, who take part in these new medicines, Ozempic, Mounjaro, to lose weight. You know, what are these good things? Are these the miracle drugs to get your weight down and get your cholesterol down and your blood pressure down and your diabetes numbers down? Or is this going to be trouble down the road when you have to come off of these drugs? Because it's my understanding you can't be on them forever. I'm not sure.
Well, and I don't think we know the answer yet. You used the phrase down the road, and I love that. I don't think we're far enough down the road to really know what these drugs are capable of doing. We're beginning to see some adverse side effects from them, and I think, and we're seeing that, by the way, because any drug that's powerful enough to do the very good things that these drugs are doing, and they're doing very good things, any drug powerful enough to do that may have the power to really do some bad things. We don't know. I am troubled by the fact that the research suggests that unless these people learn how to adopt healthy lifestyles while they're on the drugs, then they'll gain all the weight back. They'll get their diabetes back as soon as they go off. So I believe that if you're going to take a drug like that, you must use that opportunity to change the way you eat. You've got to get off these ultra-processed foods where which are addictive and unhealthy, and you must learn how to eat good foods, real foods. Otherwise, you're just going to gain it all back again.
Well, you know what is so interesting about these drugs? Now, some people have went on them and have lost a considerable 100 pounds.
Yes.
And they will go on social media, and they will go, who was that fat guy? They'll show an old picture of themselves. And there's that idea, which is interesting to me, because it's not about look how healthy I am. It's look how slim I am. And then on the other side, I have people who are extremely overweight but have said no to the drugs just simply because of what you were just talking about. I don't know if I can be on these forever. I'm not sure what the side effects are. I'm not sure what's going to happen down the road. So there are two very differing opinions here. One seems to be, I want to fit in my clothes and I want to look different. And then the other is, I'm worried about what these things could do. It doesn't seem to be about getting healthy. It's great that those numbers start to go down and people will cite that, but it seems to be more about how you look in a lot of cases.
Well, I'm afraid that is true. I think we have to acknowledge the fact that being 100 pounds overweight is really bad for your health. It changes excess weight from being a cosmetic thing into being a literal medical disorder, because what happens when you gain all that weight is that your metabolism changes, and it changes in dangerous ways. That's how type 2 diabetes changes. It changes the way you process energy input. So there is something really good to be said for losing 100 pounds. Do we know yet whether it's safe to lose it long-term, safe long-term with GLP-1 antagonists? No, I don't think we have the answer yet to that question. So that's why I'm trying to lose a little weight. I had hip replacement surgery 7 months ago. I gained 12 pounds, after that operation, because my activity level was so low. And I got to tell you, I really lost fitness. When you're 90 years old, you lose your fitness very quickly, and it's much harder to get back. So I said to myself, I want to lose those pounds because I don't think they're good for me. Are they catastrophic for me? Am I in danger? Do I have type 2 diabetes? No. But I want to lose those pounds because I don't want to carry them up the mountain. I got to go to 19,300 feet, and that's like putting a 10-pound pack on your bag. But I got to tell you, I am losing them so slowly because I am not willing to cut my calories down to dangerous levels. I am not willing to put bad foods in my mouth. And that's just fine with me. 10 pounds is not jeopardizing my health. So if it comes off, it comes off. I don't have to carry it up. If it doesn't come up, it's not going to hurt me.
Dr. Eileen, there's something I want to talk to you about, because we have done several programs on cancer over the years, and those are some really terrific programs, and people can go back in the archive and listen to those. There is a gentleman who I have known for a long time. This goes back to the party last night. He was a legendary Major League Baseball umpire. His name's Larry Barnett. He's 81 years old, and he lives in this area as well. He was at the party last night. And Larry, earlier this year, I believe it was in March, was diagnosed with terminal cancer. And the doctors have told him that he has, we don't know, but we think you have about 6 months to live. And he was told it is in his bones, it's in his blood, it's in his organs. And say all that to say this, he has decided not to take chemotherapy, decided not to take radiation, because the doctors told him it might give him another few months, but that's about it. In any event, he has now had this cancer diagnosed since March. This is coming to mid-June. He was at the party last night, did not seem to be in any pain. He came by himself. He was in absolutely good spirits. This man laughs more than anybody I know, tells great stories, is thankful for his life. We had him on the program talking about his cancer and possibly the end of his life coming up here, probably the end of his life. And we had people who listened to that program say, with his positive attitude about this, what he's facing, how can I ever complain about anything anymore? And I happen to believe that I think his attitude is extending his life. I don't know if he does have 6 months left to live. I think it could be longer.
Well, let me tell you something. There is extensive research which shows that a positive attitude is not a placebo. It actually does affect your health span and your lifespan. There's been a tremendous amount of research done, particularly at Yale, about this. Optimists actually live a few years longer than pessimists. People who have a positive attitude toward aging, oh, man, like me, I can't wait to get older. Please, God, let me get older, okay? People like me live longer on average. Now, to put us all in the same bucket is a mistake because we are all different. So there will be some people, if you say, well, the average lifespan here is 6 months, there will be some people who drop dead next week, and there will be some who live 4 years. And I categorically reject the notion of a doctor saying, you have 6 months to live. I mean, why didn't he say, you have 6 months and 4 days, or 5 months and 28 days? This is nonsense. And the fellow you are talking about may outlive that prediction by miles, or he may die short of it. And I, oh man, I love the attitude he has. And I have to tell you that if I were in his shoes, I would make exactly the same choices he made.
Well, what was so interesting to me last night is again, here is a gentleman who has this diagnosis, has been told what he's been told, and as he was leaving the party last night, he says to me, he goes, now, I want to come on and do another show with you 2 more hours, and I said, no, I'd love to have you on. If you're feeling up to it, come on and do it. He said, but don't wait too long.
I love that. This is a man who is truly alive, not in the sense that he's walking around, but in the sense of his attitude. I have a saying, oh my God, I'm going to say this 20 times a week. If this is the worst thing that happens to me, it's really going to be a good week.
You know, Dr. Ewing, what do you think the biggest advancement in medicine we have had is in the last 10 years?
Oh, well, I don't know that I could choose that. Ooh, that's a really great question, and let me reframe it. There have been so many great advances in medicine in the last 10 years that I can't pick one of them. But here's what I can say. If we don't keep the research going, we won't be able to sit here 10 years from now and say that there have been many great advances in the past 10 years. And that is why I am so upset by the closure of research labs over politics. We're not short on funds. We got enough money to bomb the crap out of Iran. But we supposedly don't have enough money for research. I can't buy that.
Dr. Ewing, I wanted to do something with you today because, as many people know, Stephen Colbert recently signed off his late-night program about a month ago. A lot of people love Stephen Colbert. And he did something on his show that I thought was kind of interesting because of a 2019 interview with Keanu Reeves, who was guesting on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert at the time. Colbert asked Keanu Reeves, what do you think happens when we die? And after taking a beat, Reeves delivered a very thoughtful response. He said, I know that the ones who love us will miss us. The exchange went viral and got Stephen Colbert thinking about ways to regularly play with a more spontaneous line of questioning, and that became the Colbert Questionnaire, which is 15 questions that are really, they're not related to anything in particular, and I thought we'd go through these 15 and see what your answers are today, Dr. Uhlein, if that's okay.
I'd be happy to do that.
All right, let's start with number one. What is the best sandwich?
A smash burger. You know what a smash burger is?
No, I don't.
Oh, my. Everybody in Los Angeles is competing for the title of best smash burger. That's a giant, thick patty that's then got a slice of tomato, a slice of onion, a bunch of lettuce. It is so big that they have to smash it down so you can put it in your mouth. I love smash burgers. We've got one of the best smash burger places 6 blocks from my house. And guys come over, I treat them with smash burgers. They call 2 weeks later and say, Art, I haven't seen you in a while. How about if I come over? Because they want, so that's my answer.
That sounds good. Question number two, what's one thing that you own that you really should throw away?
All these pens on my desk, most of which have run out of ink.
What is the scariest animal?
A coyote.
Apples or oranges?
Apples.
Have you ever asked someone for their autograph?
Yes. I asked an artist for an autograph because I loved his work so much.
What do you think happens when we die?
I don't know. I got to be honest. I've been thinking about that a little bit. You know, at the age of 90, you wonder a little bit. I've been working on a book about wellness, and the last chapter starts out, what then? Actually starts out, and then what? And the first line is, and then you die. Or do you? In fact, your legacy lives on in the memories of the people you care about. So what kind of legacy will you live? And it's determined by the way you live. And that's what kind of keeps me on the straight and narrow right now.
I think that's very interesting. Favorite action movie?
Gosh, I've blocked on the name. It was the first movie that really started this genre of technical things on the screen. It was by Michael Bay, and it had all those clickety-clack mechanical animals. Oh, I wish I could remember it. It was a smashing success because it was the first one.
Favorite smell?
Flowers.
Flowers. Least favorite smell?
I walk around the block and my neighbors think I'm nuts. I smell all the flowers.
Well, nothing wrong with that. Least favorite smell?
It's in the bathroom.
I think a lot of us would agree with you. I think I know the answer to this one without question. Exercise, is it worth it?
Well, yes, it's worth it. I hate exercise. I go to the gym. A new gym member last week was working out on a machine next to me, and he said, do you get an adrenaline high when you're in the gym? I said, no, I get that adrenaline high when I leave. And is it worth it? There is not a possibility in the world that I could say I'm climbing Kilimanjaro if I didn't exercise. I love the way I feel afterward.
Number 11, flat or sparkling?
Sparkling. May I ask you a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
are you aware that 90% of the automobiles sold in the United States today are either black, gray, or white? When I grew up, all the cars were colored. So yeah. I asked myself, why in the world? So go ahead. I pick red.
Red. Well, no, that's very interesting to me because I see an awful lot of white cars. Now, that's the one that sticks out to me. I don't know why. There are a ton of white cars out there. Here's one for you. Most used app on your phone.
Whoa. It's Siri. Because I type on the phone. I make so many errors. So I dictate to Siri. And she, by the way, she's really interesting. I once got very, very angry because Siri garbled a message. So I have to confess, I swore at Siri. And do you know what response I got?
What'd you get?
Siri said, "You shouldn't talk to me that way."
That's funny. 13. If you get one song to listen to for the rest of your life, what would it be?
I'm sorry, one what?
Song.
Song. It would be Kenny Rogers' The Gambler. You know, you got to know when to hold 'em, know when to fold 'em, know when to walk away, know when to run. Yeah. That's a brilliant song. Brilliant.
Great, great song. What number am I thinking of?
7.
Not 7, but a good guess. And question number 15, the final question. Describe the rest of your life in 5 words.
It's going to be terrific.
You know, Dr. Yuling, you are clearly an optimist. Where do you think that was instilled in you?
I'm going to spend some time thinking about that, and I'm having a little trouble coming up with something. It's sort of evolved, I think, over the decades, and it is because so many good things have happened in my life. I became a doctor. What a gift that was. I went into obstetrics. Oh, my God, it's a miracle specialty. I stumbled into television. I mean, if you had told me I would have been on TV, I would have recommended a psychiatrist for you. I retired 28 years ago at the age of 61. Since then, my wife and I have visited 83 countries, and I married the right woman, independent, able to take care of herself. I can feel good knowing that if I die, hey, she will really miss me. Mm. There won't be anyone to save her on the computer. And B, she'll be okay. Mm. She can take care of herself. So I'm an optimist. I've hit the jackpot with almost everything I've done.
We got about 5 minutes left here. Dr. Yuling, what do you make of all the AI technology? Want to talk about being around forever? Well, apparently now you just might be able to be around forever because AI can take your voice, they can take your look, and they can create you, and you'll be here forever, apparently, and so will the rest of us. What do you, is this too much, or is it...
I'm loving AI. What I do, I love to write. Sometimes I write just for myself. So I'll go on to AI and I'll say, here's what I've written about something. I've got 6 points I want to make, blah, 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 blah. What did I forget? And AI will come back and say, well, aren't you going to mention B and C and D? It's like, ooh, I forgot those. I went to the gym, got a young fellow there. He and I swapped books. We swapped stories, and I told him, he's an actor, Jonathan Tucker. I said, Jonathan, I used AI last night. This was last year. I had the greatest time. And he said, what'd you do? I said, I went on. I used it to check the science. He said, oh, doc, that's not what AI can do. I said, what can it do? He said, you go home. And you ask AI to write a letter to a woman you've been living with for 20 years, and it's a breakup letter. you love her, but this isn't working anymore. She's got to leave, and you don't want to discuss it further. I go home, and I type that in. AI comes back with the most beautiful, tender, touching breakup letter you could imagine, except for one thing. It starts out with the sentence, "I hope this letter finds you well."
You know, the technology, though, holy moly, it is absolutely something. Dr. Eileen, at 89, nearly 90 years old, what do you know for sure about life now at this point?
I know for sure that if you want to have a happy marriage that lasts 65 years, like mine, you must learn two words. Are you going to ask me?
I'm waiting. What are the two words?
Yes, dear.
There you go. Compromise is everything in the world. Absolutely. And Dr. Eileen, certainly not that you're going anywhere except Kilimanjaro to climb that here in about a month. But how would you like to be remembered by people?
As a decent human being, as someone who squeezed every joy out of life that was possible, as someone who treated other people with respect, and most of all, as someone who was truly concerned about the well-being of people less fortunate than I.
Well, Dr. Eileen, we've got about 2 minutes left in the program, and I want to take a point to say this. We have not done an interview in a while, but we're going to have to do more of them and more often because I've remembered this hour why I like having you on so much. And there are shows that we have done over the years, and I'm glad they were recorded and are in the archive. We've done them on stroke and cancer and heart disease and weight loss and all kinds of great things. And during the pandemic, you came on and gave some great takes, not advice, but great observations that a doctor would make about what was going on in that time and what was going on in our country and with the vaccinations. And I don't know how many appearances you did with me during that time, but it was many appearances. And I think it was one of those times that things that were done on a talk show truly impacted people's lives who were shut up at home and were just looking for information to compile with their own information to come out with a better outcome. So over 9,000 hours of programming in this series and 12 years in this particular series, a lot of those have been with you, and I cannot thank you enough.
Well, I thank you, and I think the reason I will go away from today's session feeling very good about it. And I think the reason you've been on this long and the reason I enjoy being with you so much is you ask good questions. You ask the right questions, and I thank you for that.
Dr. Art Eileen, getting ready to go climb Mount Kilimanjaro, 90 years old. Dr. Eileen, we're going to have you back on when you get back to tell us how it all went.
Thanks, Scott. I'd love to do that.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The one and only Dr. Art Eileen, a classic. We'll come back right after this.
There's no rhythm to it. Of course, it doesn't. I think in the end it doesn't matter, but it's just whatever you think.